The Iranian attack on Israel was a pretty extensive affair. It was extensive in geographical terms as well as in the range of weapons, 331 missiles and drones that were used. Geographically, it was designed to stretch Israeli defenses. So some of these missiles and drones came from Iran itself. Some of them came from Iraq. Some of them came from Syria. Others came from the southern tip of the Red Sea, from the Houthis, all the way to Israel. And some of them, of course, came across the border from Hezbollah in Lebanon.
There we are. Hey, welcome back to Resistance Chicks. I have to go get some puppies. I will be right back, and then Leah and I are going to do a magic switch. Okay, I'll be back. Yeah. You got this.
Whole show. The screen share should be... Go try the screen share. No,
which
over
one?
Here. I moved everything around.
There's like 20 of them.
It's a screen share. That one right there.
Okay.
Wait, nope, that's not it.
That's not it?
Try right there. Hey, there it is. Yeah,
How do I know the difference between these two?
It's like that card game.
It's like the same thing.
It's like that card game of memorization. Just remember, boom, 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 right there. You
okay.
Got this. Okay.
All right. She's got this. She's leaving me. Okay. All right. Welcome back to Resistance Chicks, our Sunday show, my favorite. They're all my favorite, but I really, really love Sunday shows. I got a huge show for you guys today. Vince really putting this together all week. There's a lot of things going on around the world. This is really important that you guys are here right now so we can strategize, so that we can pray, so we can get ourselves informed and tell our friends what's going on with the world. What is going on with the world? Well, you know, I don't want to be the boy who cried wolf. So it's important that when we talk about things like Iran firing these drone missiles to Israel, that we put it in perspective. I think a lot of us are like, can we just get World War III over with? Because it's always like this, you know, start, stop thing. Can we just get it over and get it over? But that's not what they want. The powers that be, BlackRock, Vanguard, they don't want World War III. They don't really want that. Because then there's not a lot of finances and not a lot of people to pay them so they can continue to do all the stuff they do, all their vacations, all their trips to Maui and things like that, okay? They want a world that functions. They want a world that rolls. They also need a public and a populace that does what they say. A populace that they can control, right? Well, enter in the WHO Treaty. The World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty. Signing over your rights, signing over my rights. And people around the world, rightfully, in every nation, are standing up. And there's one nation I don't think we've heard from, or certainly not in a while. Japan. Japan. The Japanese yesterday got together in a huge rally. A huge rally. And maybe I can play this on Facebook. We'll see. I'm going to play it. I think I can. Maybe I'll take it down later. We'll see. But I want to show you guys this and read this speech to you guys from the Japanese. Okay, here we go. Here's the video I want to bring up. All right, so I'm going to screen share here. Remember the card game.
That's what she said.
Thousands rally against the WHO and New World Order in Japan. However, there indeed exists something evil. It's often dismissed as a single phrase as a conspiracy, but in reality, conspiracies have been part of our genetics and culture since the age of exploration. Continue to this day, I came to realize this. In that sense, my message for today is about vaccines, that our own genetics, that use our own genetics to make our bodies produce pathogens or proteins, even if they're disguised as jabs. For example, next could be flu. And now there's panic over sugar and various things. But the strategy to use messenger types for everything has become the basic strategy of American global pharmaceutical companies. To everyone here, among friends and acquaintances, introducing genetic into the body should not be done, regardless of the type. Take this as a key message home. By doing so, I hope you can protect your children and grandchildren. In this sense, half a century later, what was then the WHO has, over these past 4 years, been guiding us through some absurd directions. Upon investigation, over 85% of the WHO's budget turns out to be funded by pharmaceutical companies and stakeholders like the Bill Gates Foundation, indicating that it's being directed towards their interests. This means our health is being used as a weapon. And now we're in the midst of a third world war fought with information, questioning whether responsible adults are aware and able to protect themselves accordingly. This is the result of our parents and grandparents protecting us, which is why we have managed to survive until today. Let's stop the third atomic bomb with our hands in the hands of the Japanese people, shall we not? This national movement actually has four objectives. First, a pledge and declaration. Here, we vow to protect our children, to protect Japan. We stand against WHO global totalitarianism, pandemic treaties, submarine IHR genetic jabs, pandemic, and we declare the elimination of all of these. Figures such as Tedros, Gates, Schwab, Biden, representatives of the New World Order. One of our primary targets, Bill Gates. What he said? No, sorry, agents. Fushimo Kishidi. Kishidi. I thought it was Bill Gates. Oh, my. And Kamikawa, Japan's Fauci. All right. So there's an article here on this. Massive rallies break out in Japan against the WHO pandemic treaty. So April 13th, 2024, will be etched in the annals of modern Japanese history as tens of thousands of citizens across the nation came together in a series of pandemic rallies. The protests centered on the widespread opposition of the pandemic treaty, with escalating concerns over infectious disease and public health becoming potent tools for an unprecedented push towards what is perceived by many as a totalitarian surveillance society. From the bustling streets of Kabukuro, is that how you say that? Kabukuro? To the gatherings of you guys are going to have to pronounce that for me, in a Japanese park. The sheer scale of participation speaks volumes. Organizers aimed for a monumental turnout of 100,000 protesters to demand answers on crucial issues such as the stark increase in excess deaths and the lack of transparency on adverse effects following the jabs. The protests not only oppose potential mandatory jabs, but also the perceived overreach of health authorities and their ties with global pharma, echoing a distressing sentiment of disenfranchisement among the populace. Demonstrators criticized the lack of explanations for a sharp increase in excess deaths and demanded accountability and clarity on jab-related casualties. Eminent speakers, including Professor Masayuki, and modern history researcher, I'm just going to try to say his last name, Hayashi, provided compelling pre-demonstration speeches that laid bare the concerning dynamics between global health authorities and pharmaceutical agendas. Professor Inhu highlighted the concerning trend of our health being weaponized in what he termed a third world war fought with information. He urged the public to resist introducing genetic jabs into their bodies, implicating a significant portion of the WHO's funding comes from pharmaceutical giants and private interests like the Bill Gates Foundation. This follows Japan's message to the world delivered by Professor Ayunu a few days ago. And then this is the message from Japan to the world. And he says, thank you very much for giving me this valuable opportunity. And this is the professor here. Modern history researcher Professor Hayashi's address was a rallying cry to resist the encroaching shadows of global totalitarianism, symbolically referring to the proactive stance against it as stopping the third atomic bomb with our hands. His pointed discourse highlighted a national movement poised against not only the pandemic treaty, but also the underlying structures threatening Japan's sovereignty and the well-being of its citizens. April 13 marked not just a protest against a treaty, but a stand against a future where health becomes a lever of control and surveillance. The massive turnout signifies a critical moment in Japan's civic engagement. Sorry. Sorry, guys. Whoa. Where'd you go?
I don't have a key. I looked all over. And I need you to go through and tell me if it's a possibility that any of these could be it.
Did we leave them behind? Did we leave it behind underneath
it? I went and checked their file. It says, please keep my keys on file for future visits.
Okay. All right. So that's what's happening in Japan. Now, I am going to, what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to find our buddy Neil. Hang on. Where's Neil? Hang on. Michelle needs me a second. And I'm going to find our dear beloved Neil, because we haven't seen him in a while. And you know who tweeted out Neil? Glenn Beck. And Glenn Beck said, you know, that Neil Oliver's, you know, one of the most important people of our time. And I truly, truly agree with that. Where is Glenn and Neil? Hang on. Let me just find him here. There we go. Where's this fool? Let me find it. I thought it was really cool that Neil tweeted out Glenn, tweeting him out. All right. Please heed this warning, says Glenn Beck. Neil Oliver is brilliant and brave. He lost almost everything for speaking truth to power. He is a friend of mine and a friend of truth for freedom.
All this incessant stuff about pandemics and birds is against a backdrop of the approaching changes to the World Health Organization, the WHO Pandemic Preparedness Treaty, and the International Health Regulations, IHR, that go along with it. And even now, after years of warning, too few people have paid any, far less enough attention to just this singular quacking duck. It's worth knowing that the WHO treaty and the IHR is just a big duck. Unless WHO member states opt out, it's an opt-out scenario, you know, and if the UK is a member state and it's showing no signs whatever of opting out, because that would require our government doing something in service of the people, and that ain't going to happen. So when that WHO treaty is amended and the IHR is updated, the WHO will call the shots. So that in the future, if the WHO says lockdown, for whatever reason, then we will lock down. If the WHO declares a health emergency, and that is loose, that could be a pandemic, or it could be to do with, let's say, the open inverted commas, climate crisis, close inverted commas, which you might argue that there's a health component there. And so in the event of something identified by the WHO as being climate crisis, then there's a health emergency right there as far as they're concerned. And there will be no possibility of questioning and no possibility of any challenge. If they say it's a health emergency, it's a health emergency. We in the UK and in all of the member states that don't opt out are preparing to surrender national sovereignty to an entity funded in the main by Bill Gates. What could possibly go wrong? The man that said, let's invent computer viruses so that we can sell them software to fix it.
So, you know what? Life around here, it's never without its excitement. Just like the world. And you know what? Here's the Neil Oliver. Longer clip of Neil Oliver. Oh my gosh, it's right here. So today,
I have arrived at the understanding
that
to make sense, think about first. You know, it's like looking up at the sky and seeing a million stars and wondering what pictures might be made from the various twinkly dots. And, you know, as they say, though, once you see it, you can't not see it. That's a cliche now, but it's really important and it's really true. All this incessant stuff about pandemics and birds is against a backdrop of the approaching changes to the World Health Organization, the WHO Pandemic Preparedness Treaty, and the International Health Regulations, IHR, that go along with it. And even now, after years of warning, too few people have paid any, far less enough, attention to just this singular quacking duck. It's worth knowing that the WHO treaty and the IHR is just a big duck. Unless WHO member states opt out, it's an opt-out scenario, you know, and if the UK is a member state and it's showing no signs whatever of opting out, because that would require our government doing something in service of the people, and that ain't going to happen. So when that WHO treaty is amended and the IHR is updated, the WHO will call the shots. So that in the future, if the WHO says lockdown, for whatever reason, then we will lock down. If the WHO declares a health emergency, And that is loose. That could be a pandemic, or it could be to do with, let's say, the open inverted commas, climate crisis, close inverted commas, which might, you might argue that there's a health component there. And so in the event of something identified by the WHO as being climate crisis, then there's a health emergency right there, as far as they're concerned. And there will be no possibility of questioning and no possibility of any challenge. If they say it's a health emergency, it's a health emergency. We in the UK and in all of the member states that don't opt out are preparing to surrender national sovereignty to an entity funded in the main by Bill Gates. What could possibly go wrong? The man that said, let's invent computer viruses so that we can sell them software to fix it. Under those circumstances, the WHO will issue orders that all member states will have to obey. It's as cut and dried as that. Pandemics used to be rare events. You might have noticed. But now the mood music appears to be that we should expect a pandemic to come along like a bus, you know, one after the other. So when I talk about learning new explanations, or at least being minded to listen to alternatives, I am minded to mention, just as an example, that I pretty much grew up hearing about the so-called Spanish flu pandemic at the end of the First World War. I'm that age. Heard about it at school. My dad talked about it in relation to his parents, who were alive at the time. And I've written it into some of my own books. I've written about how millions died of the Spanish flu, maybe 20 million, maybe more, maybe five times that number. It's impossible to settle on a figure. I've read all sorts about what the infection was, where the infection came from. I've even seen the US soldiers blamed in part. That they came into Europe late in the war, all young and fit and healthy and well fed compared to the Europeans who'd been weakened by 3 years of devastating war. And how those American servicemen may have carried the infection into Europe from home, somehow or other spreading microscopic traces of bird flu from America, embedded in the dirt, in the treads, on the soles of their boots. Well, all of that is maybe, but it's only much more recently that I've read about how the misuse of aspirin, which was new then, and certainly less than fully understood in terms of its potential toxicity. We all know you can only take whatever, 8 in a day, or you risk overdosing. We didn't know that then. And so at the time of the Spanish flu pandemic, so-called, aspirin was promoted by the drugs industry as a miracle treatment. And it was heavily endorsed by doctors wanting to be seen to do something. Mm. In the face of circumstances that made them feel helpless. Mm-hmm. And doctors don't like feeling helpless. Mm-hmm. I've read about how quickly some victims succumbed to the Spanish flu, much faster than people would normally go down and die with flu. It happened really quickly. People went rapidly downhill, ending up with bloody froth from their noses, bluing of the lips, and the flesh around the mouth and nose. Oxygen deprivation, basically. Well, it turns out those are the symptoms of aspirin overdose. It turns out doctors saw aspirin as offering hope in the face of a pandemic that seemed to overwhelm them. But they had little sense of how much and how often people should take aspirin. There's anecdotal stuff about people taking handfuls at a time, you know, just crunching down on handfuls of it. And so overdosing and then dying with buildup of fluid in the lungs, blue lips, bloody frothing, the works. So when you know all that and you allow for all that, then suddenly the understanding of what might have happened to so many people so quickly looks different. It just looks different. Less about disease, more about human hubris and misuse of a new product. Well-meaning or not, the short story is that unknown, unknowable numbers of people may have died not of the flu, but of the medicine they were prescribed in the face of it. Anyhow, let's not let's not get too wrapped up in the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918-1920. Go and have a read. There's plenty of stuff out there, including quite recent medical of them, far less put them in your mouth. And for the longest time, those products were used only as machine lubricants. You know, oil in the wheels on tractors of Amazon. They're among the billionaires developing and pushing fake meat. Meat grown in...
So, Neil, he's going down all the roads with the fake meat and the pandemic and the treaties and the pandemic treaty and all the different things. And I think we need to take stock and put things into perspective. That doctors, a lot of doctors mean well, so let's not hate all doctors. The cure can also be just as bad, but then the problem isn't necessarily the cure what they think is a cure. What is really going to be the problem is when people don't pray and ask God what to do. And then when people are trying to make money off of something, which is what is happening with war pretty much around the world, war in the Middle East, and what's happening with Israel and Iran. Okay. All of that, you know, is kind of bringing things into a reality that there are people who don't really care about other people. And they just want to make money. And there's a lot of things going on. So I'm going to take this down the road of what happened last night with Iran.
All right, joining us now, Republican.
And I'm going to give to you, I'm going to play some videos for you. And then
President Biden is set to.
We're going to discuss. Okay. We're going to discuss after I play some videos and we'll discuss. Because I'm not going to say that there's a super right and a super wrong here.
To meet with G7 leaders later today amid fears of a wider war in the Middle East. NBC's Ali Rafa is at the White House with more. Ali, good morning.
Willie, good morning. President Biden is working to coordinate what he calls a united diplomatic response to Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel, while also stressing the need for de-escalation. The president also staying alert, saying in a statement late Saturday night that while we have not seen attacks on our forces or facilities today, we'll remain vigilant to all threats and will not hesitate to take all necessary action to protect our people. President Biden adding that he ordered U.S. forces in the Middle East to help intercept dozens of missiles launched towards Israel. The president met with his national security team in the Situation Room for roughly 2 hours Saturday before a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in which a senior administration official tells NBC News the president reaffirmed his commitment to Israel's security while making clear the U.S. will not participate in its response to Iran.
Look at that. Israeli look officials at that, now that good-looking president right there who's wide awake talking to Bibi.
Renewing vows to retaliate without elaborating on exactly how. Two senior U.S. officials telling NBC News some top officials are now concerned Israel could react quickly without thinking through the potential fallout from its actions. A senior administration official says the White House believes the Israelis are not looking for a direct war with Iran, but U.S. officials can't be certain, as sources familiar say President Biden is privately expressing concern that Netanyahu is trying to drag the U.S. deeper into this conflict.
Ali Rafa at the White House this morning. Ali, thanks
okay.
so much.
Okay, so Biden isn't saying anything. Biden doesn't care. Biden's not with us. There are multifacets to this situation, okay?
Your reaction to what?
So Tehran and Iran is saying that they fired these drones knowing that they would be shot down. This was a warning. Only one person died, from what I understand. That's the way they're saying it. This guy is an arrogant, I would say evil man from Tehran. Guys, there can be bad guys on all sides. Who is laughing about all of this. And I want you to hear his explanation from Iran's point of view.
Iran has done.
Well, it's obvious that it was a major humiliation for the Israeli regime. They crossed a red line. And they got punished.
Supposedly, they took out a consul in a Iranian consul in Syria.
Board. Of course, the Israelis can say 110% of the drones and missiles were downed. That's fine. But they can also take journalists to see the bases that the Iranians have said were severely damaged. They can easily do that today or tomorrow.
Are you sure it's major? Because I saw on Twitter you said it was just a small slap in the face.
Oh, it was a small slap in the face for Iran. The two bases were severely damaged. But Iran has a huge stockpile of drones and missiles, and Iran hasn't used its most advanced weapons. So if there's...
What would they be, Professor? Nuclear weapons?
No, they're more advanced drones and missiles. Iran is not like the United States, which has and uses and has already used nuclear weapons. Iran's peaceful program, as we've seen over the years, has been peaceful, and there's never been any evidence to show otherwise. But Iran has more advanced drones and missiles. And the very fact that the Americans don't want to be a part of any Israeli counter-response shows that the Americans know where the power lies.
So Americans know where the power lies with Iran rather than Israel. This guy is arrogant. He is laughing at us. The world is laughing at us.
So the smart thing for the Israeli regime to do would be to refrain from responding. They got their punishment, and they should live with it.
It's a punishment.
They can say that 200% of the drones were down and 300% of the missiles were down. But as long as they keep quiet, they'll be safe. But if they strike Iran again, it's going to get much worse.
And do you think that could happen?
Well, the Israeli regime is a genocidal regime. It has no morality. It has its leaders are not sane in the way in which we would view people as sane. No sane person carries out genocide.
Oh, my gosh. The Iranian regime is not sane, okay? This is pot calling kettle black.
I think they also are calculating what will happen. If the regime continues to attack Iran, then Iran will attack harder next time. And then if they do it again, Iran will continue to strike back. And that is not something that's sustainable for such a small and vulnerable regime, which has already lost on the battlefield in Gaza and on the border with Lebanon.
Do you think either government has the best interests of its people at heart?
And when they are attacked, then the rest of the world has to divide.
Okay, so that's what Iran is saying. Okay.
The Iranian attack on Israel was a pretty extensive affair. It was extensive in geographical terms as well as in the range of weapons, 331 missiles and drones that were used. Geographically, it was designed to stretch Israeli defenses. So some of these missiles and drones came from Iran itself. Some of them came from Iraq. Some of them came from Syria. Others came from the southern tip of the Red Sea, from the Houthis, all the way to Israel. And some of them, of course, came across the border from Hezbollah in Lebanon. So this gave the Israelis 180 degrees to worry about in terms of their defences and, of course, Israel's allies as well. They were very successful, but the ones that really bothered them were the ballistic missiles. And the Iranians launched, we believe, 110 ballistic missiles, of which 103 were intercepted. These are some of those that are recorded by the Iranians as taking off. We don't quite know what they are, but they are probably Khorram Shah missiles or the Shahab-3 missiles, more likely, because they've got the long range. Most of them were intercepted outside Israeli territory. However, some missiles and drones obviously got quite a long way. We also have some footage of Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the most holy place for three great religions, and not far above Temple Mount, at quite low altitudes. You can see that some sort of air battle was taking place. The Iron Dome defense system that Israel runs was having to work pretty hard right above Temple Mount. So it was probably a closer thing than appears from the straight statistics. However, the Iranians did achieve success in the Nevatim Air Base. And the Nevatim Air Base is in the Negev Desert in southern Israel. And Nevatim, although these seven ballistic missiles have got through, they didn't do much damage. It's a very big air base. But symbolically, this is really important because it was from Nevatim that the F-35s of Israel took off 2 weeks ago to bomb the Iranian
consulate as part of the embassy in Damascus. And that's what set off this current round of escalation. So the Iranians will feel that although they were 99% unsuccessful numerically in what they threw at Israel, the seven missiles that got through hit the base from which they had been hit themselves. So in a sense, honours are even. The United States are saying to Israel, look, take the win and move on. Don't worry about it. Just leave it here. The rest of the world is saying to Israel, leave it. Take the victory from last night and move on. But Netanyahu is very unlikely to do that. Firstly, because this is the first time in history that Iran has successfully targeted Israel, Israeli territory itself, and that is an affront to Israel's security policy. And secondly, Netanyahu never believes in letting anybody else have the last military word. The Israeli war cabinet seems to be briefing out the idea that they will respond within 40...
Okay, can we stop with the whole W? There's no winning when you're just striking down somebody else's missiles. You haven't won anything. There's no win there. And I just would like to point out what it would look like if Iran hit one of our military bases and launched 110 missiles at us.
Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, Senator Admiral Kirby, say that they want that.
Be clear. I love Israel. I despise Putin. I despise the Communist Party of China. And I despise the Ayatollah in Iran. I don't want America to be the world's policeman. But I don't want those guys to be the world's policeman either. And with those guys, if you turn the other cheek, you just get it in the neck. More sheep is not going to solve the wolf problem. I expect, I don't know, but I expect the Speaker of the House, probably next week, to put an Israel bill, Israel support bill, on the floor of the House. I think it'll be followed by a bill to support Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. And number three, I think he will put a bill to support Ukraine. Now, I think his bill is going to make the money a loan. I think it will require Ukraine to pay it back. I think we will seize some Russian assets to pay for it. I think the bill will be limited to military aid, not humanitarian aid. And I think there will be some strong encouragement to make Europe, which is vastly more wealthy than Russia, to do a better job of putting its money where its mouth is. And I think the bill will pass. It'll come back.
So more money from us to Israel out of all of this. Where do you guys think this is going? Where do you think this is going? Lockheed Martin to the bank. These are little boys, and I'll tell you what I think. At this juncture, I lost my picture, didn't I? We're just going to screen share with no... Oh, Michelle knows. I wonder if I can get another camera angle. So we're just going to do a podcast. Okay, because I don't know where my camera is. I think I... Let's see. I don't know if I can do... Wouldn't that be funny? Where's the video? She had on a Zoom, that's why. All right, so... We're just going to do a podcast so you can hear me right now. You don't have to see me. It's probably better that you don't. I don't care. What I see are boys, little boys playing around with a game. A game. And they're playing with their toys. You see... You go out, we have guns, people like to go shooting guns. They have missiles, they want to go shooting missiles. They would like to push Israel to see how many of every defense missile that Israel has to shoot in the sky costs millions. These drones that were shot over, these drone missiles, cost thousands. Iran has a ton of them, and why does Iran have a ton of them? Iran has a ton of them. Sorry if you're seeing me now. Let me see. What are you guys... Why can't I use that as a... Where's my picture? I see in my picture. All right, you guys are just going to come with me. We're just doing tabs today. We're going to pretend I'm... What's his name? I need this screen share. Yeah. We're going to pretend I'm... want to save on, and you can't see my face because I'm so important. I'm so secretive. Iran does not have your best interests at heart. So let's just put it that way. Okay. Iran says its first ever direct attack on Israel was revenge for Israel's targeting of their Iranian consulate in Syria. Tehran says its retaliatory attack was concluded, but warns of a harsher response next time. Iran launched more than 300 drones and missiles in its first ever direct attack on Israel. Most were intercepted. Death to Israel. Iranians celebrated what they say was a response to Israel's attack on Iran's consulate in Syria 2 weeks earlier, which killed several Iranian generals. God is great. Allahu Akbar. Iran's supreme leader said the attack on our consulate was...
Promise appears to have wrapped up after nearly 3 hours of a barrage of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles that were launched towards Israel. Now, Iran has said that this is their right to defend themselves, and that is why they've launched this unprecedented attack against Israel. The Iranian foreign minister, Amir Hossein Abdollahian, said that Iran had given the United States advance warning. The Revolutionary Guard issued a number of statements, the last of which said that they hit military target, but that it was successful. Of course, that is being disputed by Israeli officials, saying they've sustained minor damage.
All right, so there we are. Israel would do what Israel would do. This is Jeremy Boring from the Daily Wire. If it were me, I would knock Hezbollah in their teeth, finish the work in Gaza, and more or less ignore Iran's failed attack. Direct escalation with Iran isn't useful to anyone at the moment, and treating them with indifference after they failed to harm you is a strong look. Someone else says, Iran has been encouraging terrorist acts and piracy against Western countries, and we've done nothing. We were slapped like Chris Rock. You guys think, what do you guys think? I'm going to bring up some GB News commentary on this. Hang on. Oh, we're going to the farmers in a minute. All right, so the UK helped knock down some of those drones.
To do it last night, and I'm glad that, as you say, Nana, that the British action, along with allies and Israel itself, has resulted in this just one sad casualty. But obviously, it could have been a lot worse. I think, though, we shouldn't give a blank check to Israel. We should never give a blank check to anybody, and therefore, it needs to be important how Israel responds now. We want to make sure that Israel doesn't escalate the situation. And if they do, if the right wing in the Netanyahu cabinet push him into doing something stupid, we need to be, you know, we need to assess our support on a case by case basis. But generally, we should be supportive of Israel, and we did the right thing yesterday.
Adam Brooks. Look, let's remember, we've all seen the videos and the pictures from last night. I was up till 3 a.m. watching this. There was 300 missiles and drones collectively sent towards Israel. Now, if all of those had landed, we could have been seen in tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of casualties, including children. So really, anyone that wanted...
Can I just point that out? Okay, like, you don't get to, like, oh, I'm just going to shoot a rocket and I just know you'll knock it down. You don't, hey, little men with big guns. You know something about guns? You know something about bullets? You don't shoot. My uncle always taught me this. You never point a gun at somebody unless you're ready to kill them. Never, 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 never. Because you just don't do it.
I wanted to avert death. And especially child deaths, should be supporting the UK doing their bit to stop that. And we played a part in shooting down some of these drones or missiles, and it was the right thing to do. Let's remember, they are an ally. If someone attacked the UK, we'd expect France, if they could, if they had jets in...
Guys, politics in world... geopolitical politics is never cut and dry. Let me just tell you that right now.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, there is no defence against ballistic missile attack on the UK. Although there is an argument that some of our T-45 destroyers might have that capability very soon. But there is no ground-based air defence of the UK, generally speaking. And I was I also listened to the debate previously and was interested to say it could never happen here. And of course, I think we have to look at what happened to Israel last night. The attack came from all directions, and the same could happen to the UK. It's not just going to be cruise missiles and drones launched from Russia across Europe to attack the UK if it ever happens. They'll be launched from submarines from the sea, from warships in the sea, from all directions, and we're very poorly prepared to defend against that sort of threat.
Would you agree with that we're poorly prepared?
I don't think there's any doubt we're poorly prepared. Yeah. I mean, the numbers in our military since 2010 have dropped significantly, and it is significantly. And that means that if we want to have operations like this, it's okay because, you know, the RAF obviously can take the aeroplanes out. But for everything else, you know, we don't have the army we had 14 years ago. And I think that's an important step that whoever wins the general election, I hope Labour, of course, so that they can make sure that we can once again grow the armed forces.
Oh my goodness!
We got some dogs here, some new dogs. That's where Michelle went. All right, this is the first time they've been here, so they're very excited.
Britain's biggest ally, both politically and militarily, is the USA. The USA's biggest ally in the Middle East is Israel. And it's inevitable that where the US decides to take military action, the UK will usually follow. Not always, but usually follow. So I think that it was inevitable that we would take sides, although arguably we could have stayed neutral. But also we have to remember, and the Prime Minister has already made the point, that we already have RAF Typhoon jets in action every day in the Middle East over Syria and Iraq. And it may be that they compensated for US assets doing the same job being diverted elsewhere to protect Israel. So I think on balance, the answer is yes. And of course, the real result is that with the terrible exception of the poor child who has been seriously injured, there were no deaths in Israel.
Yeah, I mean, that's all testament to the hard work of all the different nations that got together to protect it. But Ivor Kaplan, former Labour Defence Minister, what's your view on it?
Well, I'm very pleased to hear what we've done. I think that was absolutely essential that we went and did what we had promised we would to Israel. And I think when you see a group of nations like the US, obviously, but also including France, including Jordan, and including Australia and other places, I think that's really, really good for international defence matters. Now, obviously, and I was listening to your debate just beforehand, Nana, and there was obviously debate about what happens next to the defence budget. That is critical because these kind of things cost money. Mm. And to do that, we're going to have to be able to do it in that way.
Mm. Okay. All right. So Michelle's here. Hi, y'all. We're podcasting, Leah tells me, because Zoom shut down. So let me pull Zoom back up and see if we can't get some actual video footage here of our faces. Scott Kesterson's always trying to convince us to do podcasting, and we're trying to convince him to do videoing. So apparently occasionally when the video
recording in progress,
no, you don't. Oh my gosh, that's so weird.
Recording stopped.
Thank you. All right, let me unplug this. You guys, your patience is amazing. Your patience is so highly valued. 1 second. Unplug the webcam and plug it back in, and hopefully that'll get us something. Go, there it is. All right, let's pull this back here. Bada bing, bada boom. Back to Zoom. Ah, there I am. Okay, so we go back to main here. And let's pull this Zoom up here for 1 second. Don't you freeze on me. No, you don't. Let's go here. Boom, boom. Huh. And we're back. A little off center, but we're back. All right. So I don't know if you guys caught. I don't know what Leah said, because I actually wasn't listening to the show while I was gone. But I don't know if you guys caught our show last night with Scott Kesterson. And I asked him outright. I was like, you know, they're trying to pull us into World War III. And the big question is, will they be able to do it? That's the big question. Will they be able to pull us into World War III? So here we have Leah Faith.
I got you. Mom, can you put your headphones in?
Because oh, I can hear myself. Look at that. There we go. Nope, still hearing myself.
There we go.
Are your earbuds in, Leah?
Yeah.
Okay, look at that. Okay.
So
I asked Scott this question last night, Leah. I'll ask you the same question. They're trying to pull us into World War III. Will they actually be able to do it? That's the big question.
No, I really think at this point they're just trying to. The missiles that were launched were small. I was telling them just before you came on, the missiles that Iran launched cost thousands of dollars. The defense missiles cost millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So Iran is laughing. Their little boys throwing their drones in the air. These military guys are just like little boys who amass guns or toys.
Right.
They want a reason to use them, right? So now they think that they have a reason to use them. They're going to throw some in the air, and they're like, well, don't shoot back. It's kind of like, oh, a Nerf gun. Or when somebody hits you really hard, they're like, well, don't shoot. Don't hit me really hard back.
Right.
Okay. It's unfortunate. It's evil. It's wrong. And what we have to do is not become part of their narrative.
Yeah.
Not become part of their show. Right? Because that's what they want. They want us to be part of their show.
That's true. That's good.
And I think it's all right now. What you saw last night was all for show. Mm-hmm. And Israel is going to have to do something for show.
Yeah.
To show a show of force in return. And we just keep going back and forth with stupid little tit for tat things. And I was, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, if you guys are going to do World War III, get it over with, because the rest of us are sitting here. You don't, I think we're kind of done with both sides. Like, I think maybe in the past, we might even come down pretty hard on Iran. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in the past, there might have been a different response. And I think most of us are like, I'm just done with all of you. I'm done with all of you. And, you know, Iran is not a good country. The regime is, you know, we know a woman who was married off young at 14 and was raped, beaten because she, and then she was also beaten by the morality police for going to a co-ed birthday party.
Right.
So it's not like there's a, you know, a moral equivalency here.
Right? You know, but Scott pointed out something that, you know, is worth noting, that Iran has the fastest growing Christian population in the world.
Right, but they're not in their government.
No. But what I'm saying is, keep an eye on Iran, because you're going to see as that Christian fervor spreads, you will start to see a lot of shaking. I think is the word I'm looking for, shaking things up.
Right. Well, could you imagine if the drones were actually missiles? I mean, you don't get to play around with things like that. You don't get to say, oh, well, I knew they would knock them out of the air. And that's just the whole thing with the Palestinians and the violence that they have and the hatred that they have on both sides.
Right.
Oh, well, we know that Israel's going to knock them out of the air. We just hope that some will get through. Mm. You know, why are we playing this game? Like, I'm out. Like, this is a game I'm out. Like, I don't want the U.S. to be involved. I don't want Great Britain to be involved. You guys are going to do what you guys are going to do. And I just want out. You know, I want out of talking about it. I want out of being a part of them. I want out of, they have issues and I don't want to be a part of it anymore. I really don't. I'm tired of it. I don't know what else. I don't know about anybody else.
You got the window open. Look at your hair blowing in the breeze.
Can I say something?
Yeah, Mom, we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. It's about inflating the money. They want to hyperinflate the money. To where what your $1,000 bill is or whatever, It's going to be $1 trillion in a single dollar bill. And they'll pay off the debt that they just got into with like $5. I mean, you know, fake pieces of paper.
Right.
But it says $5 trillion on it, and they say pay the debt off. That's why they hyperinflate for. And the war is to hyperinflate the money because they're going to have to print more money.
That's
good. They can print more money, and that hyperinflates the money. Then they're going to go, oh, my gosh, the system's broken. We have to bring in this new digital currency. But they have to have a war, and they have to have an excuse. And then they have to say, well, Christianity failed. We're all going to become this one world government with one world religion. It's all a setup. Why didn't they kill a lot of people?
Yeah.
It's a game. It's it's a play. It's an act. And they're trying to get us all fearful.
Game,
the more
play,
fearful
and act.
You are,
it's a game, play, and act.
The more they control you and the more you don't think clearly.
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is not play into their hands, especially right now.
You can't fight back.
Right.
But I went across a video this week that this guy is a Mises Australian economist, and he's going state to state, changing all the states to legalize gold and silver gold. I had a video and everything, and as soon as I posted it, now 5 minutes later, they took it down.
Really?
Because he's a Ron Paul, Ralphie Farmer kind of guy, Mises guy. They teach constitutional money. And the only way they can keep us slavery is the more we tolerate their counterfeiting money. And then if we tolerate their counterfeiting digital, then they put everything in digital. They own the world. They control the world. And they're world conquerors. But God in us is more powerful.
Amen.
You know, also, it's interesting. I'm going to kind of move on a little bit here. Because did you want to say something, Michelle?
That's it.
The U.S. and U.K. banned deliveries of Russian copper, nickel, and aluminum to Western metal exchanges. And hear what this means. On Friday, the U.S. and the U.K. imposed new restrictions on trading with Russian aluminum, copper, and nickel in the latest hollow bid to curb Vladimir Putin's ability to fund his war machine. Obviously, this isn't going to do anything to him. The rules prohibit delivery of new supplies from Russia to the London Metal Exchange, where the global benchmark prices are set, as well as the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Yet, like the case of the oil sanctions, the decision is purely for popular theater, and it will not prevent Russia from being able to sell its metals. Since the sanctions do not prevent non-U.S. persons and entities from buying physical Russian copper, nickel, or aluminum. While the LME plays a pivotal role in setting global prices, the vast majority of metals are actually bought and sold between miners, traders, and manufacturers, and they don't actually go into this, you know, this exchange that they're trying to limit it on. Still, as Bloomberg notes, the new restrictions are likely to affect prices, which are used as a benchmark in the huge number of contracts around the world. For months, an influx of Russian metal has weighted the LME prices, particularly for aluminum, with non-Russian supplies trading at a premium. The sanctions will also affect the willingness of traders to handle Russian metal, as many view the ability to deliver the LME as essential. That means the metal, like Russian-sourced oil, is likely to trade in a widening discount at a widening discount to other or to other origins, thus reducing the revenue Russia receives while still continuing the flow into the global market. And what is that going to be? It's just going to mean higher prices for you and I. That's what that means. On the other side, it's not really going to hurt Russia at all. There's some other tensions boiling. Watch weaponized migration in actions. Michelle, you can bring up this as a Zero Hedge article. Hundreds storm Polish border from Belarus. Coming from Russian ally Belarus, hundreds of very aggressive migrants carrying ladders and wielding rocks and tree branches stormed the border of Poland on Wednesday, but were repelled by security forces. Belarus has long been accused of weaponizing migrants by encouraging them to travel to Belarus only so they can be pushed into Poland and Lithuania. According to a statement issued by the Polish border guard and reporting by Babel, the onslaught took place around 10 a.m. in a marshy area in the dense Białowieża forest, which is a popular but difficult avenue for attempted crossings. Michelle, there's a video there if you want to see it there. Video shared by the border guard shows several pairs of migrants marching through the marsh and carrying what appear to be primitive ladders.
Oh, my gosh.
Made from forest wood.
Oh, my
Next,
gosh.
Next, you see migrants massing along rows of this wire laid down in a watery marsh. The Polish security forces confronting them on the other side. While the government statement didn't describe the origins of the migrants, news aggregator Twitter account Vizguard 24 said that they were from Africa and from the Middle East. In recent years, Belarus and Lithuania have built border walls stretching for hundreds of kilometers. If you scroll down, today's feel-good video. Did you already watch that one?
Nope.
Maybe you don't watch movies.
Whoa. What? On, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Border where the third world migrants... Oh, wow. Okay.
Whoa.
That's intense.
Oh, my gosh.
But...
Water cannons.
You shoot them at that point if they're trying to bring your country violently?
Right.
Like, isn't that kind of an act of war?
Yeah. Kind of. I think they just like to play with water guns.
Let's scroll down.
There's somebody using a slingshot.
There's another one.
Oh my gosh. Hang on. They're throwing sticks through the fence there.
Yeah. And what is that? What's that going to do?
This is just silly. At this point, you're just playing
Polish Defense Ministry releases a video reminding the world that Poland sent in the army to protect the border when Belarus tried to use.
Hang on, I got to help the dog get up the stairs.
Okay.
Hang on, I'm coming. Oh, she's got it.
Nope.
Oh, that was a video from October, anyways. This is a new. We may need to put the. Mom.
Yes.
I think that needs to turn off.
What turn off?
That.
Oh.
Leah.
Yeah. Are you back?
I'm back. Yeah. I thought you should have been talking. Why don't you come back to silence?
Okay. I got a video right next to that.
Okay.
The World Economic Forum advisor, Yuval Harari. If bad comes to worst, the scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite. Leaving
Is
the
it
rest
a Twitter?
Out. Yeah. It's a tweet. It's like to the left of the Zero Hedge article.
Oh, you said to. Okay. There it is. All right. Okay, Sissy, you gotta stop coming down the stairs.
That, you're gonna need this other.
In its own interests, even if it doesn't benefit the
vast majority
of the population. I can't hear it either, and that's the video itself. Oh, let me turn it up.
No.
Here we go.
This has happened so many times previously in history, and it's probably going to happen again.
Oh, Leah, hang on a second. Let me make it so you can hear it. That's what you're trying to tell me. This is a Zoom setting. Guys, be patient with us here. We're not, it's not normal for us to, here we go.
It's okay.
No, I got it. I know, but it's good. Well, first of all, the volume was down anyway, so I'm glad you said something.
I think I can press play on my end.
I know. Here we go.
One of the biggest dangers to the planet today is this technological utopia, because probably for the elite, it will work. If bad comes to worst, and when the flood comes, the scientists will build a Noah's Ark for the elite, leaving the rest to drown, the rest of the people and then the rest of the ecosystem. But they are likely to be able to construct this technological Noah's Ark, which is probably what much of the elite is counting on. You have a small elite.
There it is. That's it.
Okay, so does he watch too many movies?
Yes.
Like, I honestly think at this point, guy is not an evil genius. I honestly think he's really dumb and really stupid, and he takes his cues from movies. And he knows he gets airplay when he says the most outlandish things. I think that at home, I think he's a Dylan Mulvaney. I think he's playing us at this point, because the things that he says are so outlandish and so crazy and so weird and not normal that I believe that he is playing us. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. A little bit. Although he sounds so convinced.
I believe he's an actor.
You think he's an actor?
I truly believe.
It's too fantastical. I get it. It's too fantastical. Okay, yeah. Leah, I closed the gate so Sissy can't keep coming back down. Because she can't get back up by herself.
Right.
You want me to play another one?
No, I just really think it's too fantastical. I don't think they mean it.
I mean, are we going to another video?
Let's play this. Oh!
What?
The wind blew my light over. Mama, I just watched it.
I don't even think it was lighting you up anyway. Am I staying on screen share? Where am I going? What's the next video?
Okay, go to a video to the right. I want you to play this. This is the young English guys can't even carry a flag.
Oh boy.
It's
We're flying our flag in our own country. What are you doing wrong, mate? We're still there. We got the Union Jack in. Look at them. It's our country. Irish, Palestinian, mate, everywhere. But we're getting pulled over for holding a Union Jack. It's England, mate. It's Great Britain. We're not doing anything wrong. If they want to do something, we'll do something. But this is England. We're holding the British flag up. Mate, listen. We're holding the Union Jack up. It's England. United Kingdom.
We've not been racist, we've not been verbalist to anybody. She's laughing. Excuse me. Have we said anything
or done anything wrong? No. We're just holding our flag.
Hang on, let the officer speak. Don't be rude. Just us two. There's nobody else. We're just here for us, same as they're here for us. We're not here for racism.
We say for us, though.
England.
For our beliefs. They're here for their beliefs. We're here for our beliefs. We've not spouted racism. We've not attacked anybody. We've not attempted to provoke anyone by pulling their flags or verbally abusing them.
Look at these little nicely dressed young men.
We've come here and flown our flags, same as they have. And we've been moving through. I was followed all the way down that gate by two members of the community.
Okay, so I can't imagine, I'm going to mute this, I cannot even imagine being in America and going anywhere and being told that I couldn't fly an American flag, like for any reason whatsoever. I mean, this is, it's America. So you're looking at the UK and they're, and this is so interesting to me, by the way. He said they're standing for their beliefs and we're standing for our beliefs. But I'm thinking to myself, your country's flag shouldn't be categorized as a belief and shouldn't. Okay, hear me on this. If the people that are gathering have a belief where the nation's flag is offensive to them, we have bigger issues. Like, am I making any sense? And especially if it's a belief system that the flag should be offensive. I mean, this doesn't even, you're talking about civil war at that point. If those people hate the flag so much and they hate the nation that they're in so much, and yet they have the right to find it offensive. I mean, this is just, I don't even have words for that. That's just too much. What's happening?
Oh, the dogs. I tried to get him a bed. All right, you want to go to the next video to the right?
Yes.
The climate scam hoax. Geologists have read geological history and read climate history. There is nothing new about today's climate.
Boom.
Great crusades.
Oops, hang on one second. I'm trying to turn the volume up.
Great crusades is the climate crusade. And it has undoubtedly been the most successful. I guess because it's easier to explain to people what a scam it is. And there are a lot of people, particularly geologists, there are a lot of geologists supporting the my climate crusade because they've read a bit of geological history. They've read climate history. They know there is nothing new about today's climate. There's nothing extreme, there's nothing new. The fluctuations are very minor, the temperature is very moderate, and even if it warms up a bit, we'll probably benefit.
Well, look at that. Crusades. Finally, some sanity. I don't think people like living in insane world anyway. What's this from Glenn Beck? Oh, you already read that one. All right. Neil Oliver's a brilliant guy.
The next
guy.
One is It's Happening. Peter Sweeting got to meet with German farmers. He said they told me that they are united with the truckers and taxi drivers in protesting the climate agenda. I saw massive public support with nonstop honking from cars passing by. He says the mainstream media won't show you this. For several months now, farmers all over Europe have been protesting against tyrannical climate policies. New climate policies like increase in fuel costs means that it will become even harder for already struggling farmers to make ends meet. Tens of thousands of farmers all over Europe have been taking to the streets in protest. He went to Germany to meet with them. So if you were to scroll down and see Peter Sweeting there, in Germany.
Beth was just a truck driver that drove past supporting the farmers protesting here in Germany. This is Peter Sweden, and I'm on the ground here in Germany reporting from the farmers' protest. Unfortunately, I don't speak much English, but I've spoken with them. More support. I spoke with the farmers and they told me that they're here protesting against the high diesel taxes, they're protesting against the CO2 climate policies, and they're all standing together. It's not just the farmers, it's the truckers, it's the farmers, it's people from the different industries. There's a taxi standing right here supporting the farmers that are protesting. And we won't see this on the mainstream media, but the farmers are still out there protesting now for, more support from the Autobahn. They've been protesting here now for some 2-3 months, and this is still going on. You won't see this on the media, so make sure to share this video everywhere you can.
Wow. You know, this is such an incredible thing to me that they're still continuing, and why this isn't, I mean, I guess I don't watch enough mainstream media, I don't watch any, to know that they're not talking about this, but I know they're not talking about this. Like, can you sidestep something this huge?
They don't want to talk about it. They don't want you to know, because people obviously would side with them, and they do side with them. That's why they're out in the streets. And so they believe, that's why they have such a chokehold on the media. They have a chokehold on YouTube. They have a chokehold on everywhere but Twitter now, right? And Rumble. And that's the idea. If it's, let's just pretend, that's what they were doing in China with Tiananmen Square, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen. So let's go to the next video here. It's very sinister. This is talking about gender craziness, that people actually believe these kids want to change their gender. I think that that's a really interesting take, and I'm glad somebody's saying that. J.K. Rowling, and Michelle, I don't know if you watched this part of the show. She's been obviously outspoken about transgenders in sports and things like that, and women in women's spaces. Well, Scotland produced a law basically that would criminalize J.K. Rowling and her speech.
Right.
Not for hers particularly, but she challenged them. Okay, arrest me. And now they had to, I believe that they had to rescind that law because it was so crazy. Let's go ahead and play this.
2-year-olds could be trans. Now, that is one of the most horrifying things I read today. Actually, J.K. Rowling tweeted that out there. To say that a 2-year-old can think that they can be another gender when my 4-year-old still thinks she's Elsa on some days. You know, there's no common sense. It's very sinister that these people actually believe that these kids want to change gender. And unfortunately out there are parents that almost see a trans kid as a fashion accessory now. And I think this whole agenda has pushed on people that this is normal to change gender. And we have to push back. And as I said earlier, to be trans is not normal.
Well, I don't agree with that phrasing. I think it's extreme. It's a big step, Adam. But there are clearly people throughout history who have been.
But it's
trans.
Not normal behaviour, is it?
I think as far as children are concerned, children need to be given the space to explore the world, and that can include experimenting with, breaking previous gender stereotypes. That doesn't mean that people should be sort of labelled at the age of 2, which I completely disagree with. And I think that what we need to see is, I'm sure that Stonewall will come into line with the with what the CAST report have said, and I hope that we can all be more positive, because members of the trans community do need support, but that is different to some of the mistakes that were being made previously.
I think what does a lot of harm to the trans community are some of these trans activists. You know, they mask up, they black up, and they go to women's rights events and they threaten them. I mean, the trans activists online and on Twitter are some of the most vile and aggressive people that I've encountered on my 15 years
on there. I think there's horrible scenes where, blokes in balaclavas are trying to close women down. But it's still, we need to make sure the trans community...
It's toxic. I think it's very toxic from that side.
I can't believe anybody, and you can bring up the next video because we're going to talk about J.K. Rowling. It's hard for me to even stomach that anybody in any sort of sane world can't just say...
Not this one.
We're not... How is it that man, the bald guy, was conflating gender norms with being trans?
And that's the thing, like, this conversation for even GB News to give that guy a chance to speak, like he's some sort of moderate on this debate. There's no moderate. If you believe that a child can experiment in any fashion with even, you know, he said gender norms, but that's not what he meant, with their gender at all, you are a pedophile and you are an extremist. Right?
We're talking about sexual organs and cross hormones. We're not talking about wearing shorts and t-shirts.
We're not talking about little Johnny wants to play Barbies. When Lee and I were growing up, our cousin Jeremy, we would beg him to play Barbies with us, and he would because he was very nice. Okay. And we would go and we would play football and we would do we would play baseball, and Lee and I were assigned to be ghost men. You know what that means? It's like that's not even a position. That just means they want you to run the bases. It was very mean. Okay. But we played the boys' stuff. So that's what we're talking about when it comes to breaking down gender stereotypes. You don't need to break down gender stereotypes. You know that, right? Because throughout all of history, no one really stood to them as staunchly. I'm going to say this real quick, and then we'll move to this next clip. Dogs. The reason why. Leah, you want to mute yourself if they're going to bark?
Yes.
The reason why we have this gender issue is because people who have tried to over-sexualize a society have said that if you are a female, you get your nails done, you wear lipstick, you wear eyeshadow, right. You wear eyelashes, you wear high heels, you wear skirts. Right. And then if you're a boy, you know, whatever. They're the ones that have said, well, I feel like a woman, so I'm going to get my nails done. Do you know most actual women wake up and put on gym shoes, stretch pants, and an oversized sweatshirt. You show me the transgender dude that comes out and says, I would maybe believe you then. Because most women don't wake up and go, this is me being a woman today and doing all that stuff. A real woman wakes up and works hard all day. She picks up after the kids. She's going to the grocery store. She's cooking food. Literally, that's a woman. So if you feel like a woman, maybe you should identify as someone that works harder than anybody on the planet. Try that.
All right, let's play this clip on J.K. Rowling.
Just literally cancelling common sense.
I mean, it's an extremely strong point of view from her, an extremely strong statement. She says in the Sunday Times this morning, launched an extraordinary broadside against politicians of every stripe, the police, the media, the NHS and universities. I mean, that's right across the board, okay? And her actual quote is, she says, the cowardice of those in positions of influence was worse than the ravings of the militants. What she means by that is that, okay, if you get raving militants, they're part of our society and they're raving militants. But if people in positions of authority who are running the offices of state are also condescending to extremist views when it comes to transgenderism, then we've got a real problem. And it's a terribly strong statement. I wish she'd gone on to say the only person really who's made any sense in this whole argument and who we should all look up to and who should be given a damehood is, of course, the author, stroke authoress, J.K. Rowling, who is the one person who's spoken out with great clarity on the way she thinks about the issue, which has given millions of people a focus.
I mean, yes, for speaking out, she received death threats, rape threats, and all sorts of horrific things on social media. Kai, I mean, Kemi's words are always very strong. She never beats about the bush, does she? But she's saying with the trans ideology in particular, not only has it harmed kids, often something they can't do anything about now, but it's silencing people. People that wanted to protect kids were shut up because of an ideology, not even a factual medical thing, an ideology, the cult of transgenderism.
I don't accept that. I don't accept that people who don't believe in transgenderism or don't believe in trans children have not been given a platform, because they have. They have been allowed to air their views. We've had this discussion for years and years, and I mean, the one thing that really gets me about this debate is that this is a tiny proportion of the population.
This is true.
transgender children, for instance, puberty blockers, are administered to only around 100 children at the minute in the UK. Mm. That's out of, what, 60 plus million
people. I totally agree with that. A tiny proportion, but supported by millions of voices that are encouraging it to develop and develop and develop.
But that's totally acceptable in the way that, you know, the fact is, if somebody as a child feels that they are a different gender or believes they are a different gender, they have the time over those many years, and the fact is waiting lists mean that that is many years, to transition socially and then to transition medically if they feel...
But their brains aren't properly developed, are they?
No, but the fact is the regret rates of a transition surgery are much, much lower than any other surgery that you would see.
So the fact...
What is that, Michelle? Stop, pause. He said that the regret rate of a transgender surgery is much lower than any other surgery you would see. How can this guy be on TV?
I didn't know that there was regret rate for really any other surgery outside of like maybe LASIKs and some knee surgeries. Like that's the only surgeries I've ever heard of anybody.
Than any other surgery. Where is he getting you brought a bold-faced liar with no facts to come on and say that this whole transitioning socially thing, what is that? I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because
we don't have to keep going on it. No, that's good. What do you got next?
I'm just getting so angry.
So there's a lot of videos up here from that you didn't close out.
It's okay. Hang on. Let me finish my thought first.
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to the main.
Okay, you can go back to the main. It's a nice breeze from you.
Look at you.
Right? It's nice.
This is Leah Svensson reporting from windy Milford, Ohio. Did you look like you're outside?
It's getting super hot out today. Michelle got her clothes out. There goes my light again. Okay, let's go over to the left. This one's funny to me. Gordon Ramsay's $13 million pub is taken over by professional squatters.
Before we get to that, can I close out anything having to do with Iran and Israel?
All of it.
Okay, because there's a lot of those that are still up and that you didn't close down. So when you say to the left, I don't know where to go.
Okay, there. It's a Great Britain news. It's an N. It looks like an N.
Oh, that's a GB News
story. Yes.
I got Jeremy Clarkson. I've got Vladimir Putin. I've got Gordon Ramsay. Got it. Just giving him a little preview about what you got coming.
Hi, PJ.
Now, a new study has found 35% of people living in the UK face daily concerns about becoming homeless.
Yes, many people face being unable to afford their mortgage or rent as a result of the ongoing cost of living crisis. Our Northwest of England reporter Sophie Reaper has more on this story.
On the brink of becoming homeless. New research has found that over a third of Brits are living in fear as they teeter on the verge of losing their home. As prices soar and stability wavers, many are being forced to live on a month-by-month basis.
Only a very small percentage of people have enough money to survive for 3 months. You compare that to just 6 or 7 years ago, people had disposable income that would keep them going for 6 to 12 months. Now most people have less than three. Most people, being truthfully honest, have less than 1 month. So if they lost their income today, they would only be able to pay their bills for a single month.
You can pause that, Michelle. I don't want to belittle the homelessness epidemic that's happening. I'm sure it's a result of COVID and shutting people's jobs down and shutting their livelihood down. But a group of squatters have taken. There we go. Go ahead.
Go ahead. What? Leah,
what?
I'm not playing anything. Are you?
Oh, it was the next video at the end of that.
Okay, at the end of the article?
Somehow it played.
It's playing on your end. It's not playing here.
So you're hearing the video.
What?
For some reason, the video that needed to play, the Gordon Ramsay one, played after the homeless one.
So
you got to go to the homelessness.
Squatters in London.
No, that's the end. I mean, that's it.
That's it. Squatters in London. Well, then play that. There it is. It says squatters in London.
Well, hang on. Now I got to go. I thought we just talked about... Hang on. That's the video I just played.
You played a homeless video.
Taken over a pub, which is leased by Gordon Ramsay, no less. Right. The pub is currently up for sale with a guide price of £30 million. It is understood that Kitchen Nightmares host Ramsay called the police on Wednesday but was unable to have the squatters removed. The Metropolitan Police said in a statement they were made aware of squatters at a disused property but added, this is a civil matter and so police did not attend the property. Let's see what my panel make of this. We haven't got much time on this one, unfortunately. But, you know, you can talk very fast because they've drunk half of their Angela Rayner cocktail. Kai, Gordon Ramsay, why can't we just boot squatters out? If we own a property or lease property, why can't we just boot them out?
I know that's tempting, but the fact is, long-term empty properties have increased by 24% in the last 6 years. There's 1.2 million people on the social housing lists. People don't have a place to live. And so these empty properties, these empty restaurants, empty posh flats in London, I can't get that exercised about that, to be honest.
But, I mean, it's...
But, Kai, it's not a domestic dwelling. It's not a hotel. It's a restaurant and bar. So, you know, it's not even suitable for habitation by people who say they want to live there. It hasn't got the facilities of social habitation, like bathrooms and that kind of stuff. So they're just trying to make a protest. But what it does highlight is the enormous disparity in fairness in property laws in this country. A mate of mine had a house in Cambridge, you know, which he just rented out, and in between two rentals once, he suddenly got a call to say... The house has been taken over by squatters. They've changed the locks. They just moved in. It took him 9 months to get them out, and it was an extremely expensive business. Yeah. And that's just not fair. It's just not fair that if you've worked all your life and invested some money in property because, you know, interest rates at zero and there's nowhere else to invest your money, and then suddenly somebody who's got no claim to that property and doesn't seem to have earned very much in life takes over your property. It's an outrage, and we've got to change the laws and allow people to go in there, and there are specialist companies who
want
to fix squatters from your home.
This is happening in the United States, too.
This is happening everywhere.
It's kind of funny. I kind of think it's funny. I don't know.
I'm not sure that I think it's funny as much as I think to myself... What has society come to that we have so many people that are brazen enough to do this?
Absolutely.
Right? And so that's where I'm kind of thinking to myself, you know, when I was a kid, there were squatters, but they, I mean, it was so few and far between, and they were people that were literally, I mean, the outcasts of society. They were the homeless. These are people that are, for all intents and purposes, kind of regular. Mm-hmm. That are they're criminals is what they are. Why, this is we're legalizing talking, criminality.
The suffering and I covered this on my show on Sunday, Michelle. If you could find, there's a Twitter video. It's a Wall Street Silver Twitter video, and it's a woman.
Is it open or do I need to pull it up on your Twitter?
It's open.
Okay, Wall Street Silver. Got it. Hang on 1 second. Let me find it.
Hi, Tessa. You go lie down. She's trying to find a bed. Did you bring their beds?
I didn't buy groceries. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay. So it says, I didn't buy groceries. This is just going to, I don't need to read the quote. She'll just say it.
No, just play it. Yeah.
Being charged over $200 a month for a carbon tax. My refrigerator. I didn't buy groceries last pay period. You know why? There's an extra $40-something on my gas bill. $187 on my hydro bill. I filled my SUV up to go to work. Used to cost me $71. Cost me $98. I was feeling nauseated at the gas station. Was going to buy myself a little ginger ale to drink on the way to work. A can of ginger ale, 12-ounce can, was going to cost me $3.49. It's wrong. It's sad. It shouldn't have to be this way. Canada, Canadians are suffering. And I'm not suffering near what a lot of people are suffering. I've seen people write death notes, posted on Twitter, single mom wanting to end her life because she said her 9-year-old daughter was the only thing keeping her alive anymore. It's pretty sad. I work full time. I've always worked hard. I'm a personal support worker.
You know, I want to address something, and this is really important for where we're going, guys.
Hey, Michelle.
What,
Mom? Would you be willing to give up the land you have? Are those people willing to give up their land? Because it's almost a guarantee that the land that they bought was stolen from somebody else in the 1900s when they brought in property taxes. All the bigwigs start taking the land. We personally know somebody who was a big farmer, had like 800 acres, and his land was stolen from by the banks because they couldn't pay the property taxes, or they couldn't pay their trucks or whatever, or their tractors. Mm-hmm. And so this has been going on since the 1900s. And I've been saying from the beginning, everybody's going to have to give what they have, give it to the original owners, and start from there. Because if you're upset about this, then you have to be upset about what happened in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And the land you own was probably stolen from somebody. Are you willing to give it back? Mm-hmm. They've been doing this since the 1900s when they went off the Constitution. Mm.
My thoughts on all of this are, we live in a society where, and I'm not trying to diminish this woman and her experience, right? But we are so accustomed to so many comforts in life that everything is just disproportionate. You want a ginger ale and you want it to cost next to nothing because you're used to cheap Chinese goods. You know, she's talking about her gas bill. She's talking about her automotive gasoline bill. And so now what we have done is we have slowly allowed ourselves to become trapped in a society where you can't function without things that we have functioned without since the dawn of time. Okay. Cars, gas, indoor water, you know, so I am very empathetic on the one hand because we didn't ask per se to become a part of this type of society where we're dependent on all of these things so that such as if our electricity gets shut off, it's practically the end of the world. But we also aren't pushing back against it. And most people don't want it any different. You know, if you present to them the idea of, you know what, I would love to live out in the country. I would love to have the Monticello refrigeration thing that just blows my mind how they dug that thing in the hole and then they've got a refrigerator. Okay. I would love a society where we had like our Amish friends that have an ice house where they cut the ice in the winter and they've got it all stored. We could be doing all of these things, right? We could have wood-burning stoves so that we can always cook. We could build ourselves with a modicum of money if we had a little lake like the Amish do. And even if we didn't, we have a water source where we could be freezing up enough ice throughout the winter so that we have a refrigerator all summer long like they do. We could be doing all of those things. We could pull ourselves from this system so that when the system collapses and when inflation rises, we are untouched by it. But we haven't made that choice. And so as much as I feel sorry for people who are suffering right now, and I genuinely do at the same, and we're in the same boat. I mean, we're paying the same, you know, types of bills that you guys are paying. The only thing that you can't get out of right now without the power of God or doing some sort of extreme thing is your property taxes, right? But outside of that, everything else, we all could technically pull ourselves out of the system enough so that inflation does not affect us.
Can you go over to the left? There's a tweet.
We just aren't doing it because we are satisfied with the status quo.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I am. I'm doing it right now. Okay. I'm still talking. Okay. We're satisfied with which clip am I looking for?
It's just a Twitter with Neil Oliver and the gold bars.
We're satisfied with the way that things are right now. And so when the poop hits the fan and we're left with whatever we're left with, I'm thinking, guys, but we didn't fight back against it because so many people were like, yeah, but I really like my things. I like my microwave. This isn't Neil Oliver. It's somebody else. Oh, there it is. Okay, let me scroll back up.
So Neil Oliver says, anyone got any gold they don't need? I hear the price is up 160 quid in a month. Unprecedented. Tide going way out in advance of the tsunami. 10 of these would have bought you an average home in 1929. Actually, 10 of those would bought you a better than an average home, and 10 of those would now buy you like a $750,000 home right now. So
there you go. So what does that tell you? That tells you that the only wealth preservation, the only way to preserve your wealth, is with gold and silver. Because otherwise, if you are investing in the dollar, which we said this on Friday, investing in the dollar is holding it as your savings. If you're saving a paper dollar or whatever, a pound or wherever you are around the world, whatever your money is, if that's what your savings is in, then that's what you're investing in. So you need to view it that way. I have chosen to invest in something that diminishes daily. That makes you, and I'm going to say this and I say it with love, an idiot. Nobody invests in something that diminishes every day. And yet we, because it's almost like a religion, we can't get out of it. We're addicted to it. We're addicted to the dollar. We're in some sort of state that says, you know, I don't even know. It's brainwashing. You're brainwashed. If you're investing in the dollar, meaning your savings account has, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $10,000, $5,000, whatever in it, and you're like, or you're holding on to cash at your house, and every day it loses value, it's that value's never coming back, then you're investing in something that every day a little sliver of it gets cut off. That makes you dumb and brainwashed and captive. So now if you're a person that says, Michelle, I live paycheck to paycheck, well, then there you go. God's going to take care of you, and that's fine. I'm talking to the people that actually have savings and you're holding on to paper dollars. And it's, I'm going, and not only that, but you're investing in something that diminishes every day and at some point is going to burn up to nothing. So that's what I got. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just FYI, what's going on? I want to give you guys an update of what's happening in Brazil. There's a lot of censorship happening there. The Brazilian Supreme Court, this Brazilian judge, who remember was a thug and a gangster, who was brought out of prison just to run Lula. They are going hardcore on freedom of speech. They want to take out Twitter. They want to take out Rumble.
Wow.
There was a fighter, I guess, that won some sort of UFC fight last night. And he went on a Brazilian fighter. Went on kind of a little bit of a rampage. I really don't want to read it, but he was, you know, obviously pro America and pro Constitution with a few F-bombs. But there's a lot of journalists who are worried about being censored. There are journalists that are being censored in Brazil. There are a lot of journalists who are afraid of being arrested under Lula. Brazil is turning into tyranny. Freedom of speech is no more. So let me see if I can't. I'm going to. Could you go to what I just tweeted out, Michelle? Yep. This is Rob Roos, an MEP here from the Netherlands. He looks a lot like Geert Wilders. He's like Geert Wilders' twin.
Well, I want to also thank the Brazilian friends and also Marcel from Sao Paulo and Michael Schellenberger for being with us in this fight and for being here in this in parliament. The fight for freedom is not for fearful people, they say, and that's why you are here. You are here to defend your freedom despite of all the backlash. I admire this. I'm worried about Brazil. I'm worried about the worldwide trend of leftist governments passing draconian laws to crack down on dissenting voices. When President Bolsonaro was in power, the European Union was constantly making noise against him. We were supposed to believe he was some kind of tyrant, but the truth is that there was freedom of speech. The opposition was free to disagree with the policies and the voice its dissent. Now, Lula is out of jail and back in power. And all the things the left accused Bolsonaro of, they are now actually doing that themselves. And what about the European Union? The EU is silent. Lula and Macron seem big friends, no word about the increase of censorship. Should we be surprised about this? Perhaps not. Not if we consider that the mass inquisition against conservatives in Poland is sold to the Europeans as the restoration of the rule of law. It becomes clear once and for all that the left isn't serious when it issues all of its terms, democracy, rule of law, European values. To us, these concepts are valuable, and these terms.
Okay, you can pause that. I'm just going to read to you.
For the left,
what's happening in Brazil should terrify you. It's from a journalist. A day and a half ago, it seemed like things were calming in Brazil. The New York Times of Brazil editorialized against censorship. The head of the Brazilian Bar Association gave a strong statement in support of freedom of expression. And the president of Brazil's Supreme Court said the conflict between Brazil and Twitter, or X, formerly, was over. People talk the game, but you don't act on the words. All of that changed. Brazil's President Lula this week called for criminalizing lying. Given that everyone lies, Lula is proposing to give the government the power to arrest anyone he wants. Thousands of workers' parties activists took to Twitter to demand that this particular journalist be arrested for the things that he said during his testimony before the Brazilian Senate. And today, the head of Twitter in Brazil announced that they have quit out of fear for their safety. I am not afraid for myself. As I said on Twitter a few days ago, I fear neither the devil nor Demora, as the Supreme Court justice rapidly turning himself into Brazil's dictator. I am taking all necessary precautions to ensure that I can leave Brazil safely and without being arrested. You can help by sharing this video. And yet, what is happening in Brazil terrifies me nonetheless. I love this country and its people and fear that it is on the cusp of totalitarianism. A significant share of the left wants to incarcerate their political enemies. Respected Brazilian journalists say that with a straight face that the government must engage in mass censorship in order to protect democracy. Brazil is everything that George Orwell feared and more. I would be less worried if Brazil were small and irrelevant. It's not. Brazil is the largest and most important nation in Latin America. Just this week, top Brazilian government representatives were in China talking about how China, one of the most totalitarian nations in the world, is a model for Brazil. Brazil is an inspiration for European totalitarians who have weaponized government intelligence agencies to spread disinformation about their political enemies and are implementing a censorship system to control the entire internet. The most terrifying part of it all is the marriage of this psychopathic government leaders like Lula and Demores with totalitarian activists and voters. Governments have successfully brainwashed a significant percentage of the population into supporting mass censorship. Young adults raised on social media are today more intolerant than the students in China's Cultural Revolution. During the rise of communist fascism in Europe, many Jews and other people were persecuted. So what do you think, Michelle?
I think that this was always going to come to a head.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep pushing people and pushing people and pushing people. And I think that there's also a rush to try to grasp the power, because the sense of the uprising of the people is stirring. And so then these governments that be, these tyrannical, you know, chokeholds, they're going to try to squeeze that choke even tighter. And what's going to happen, and what is happening, you're seeing this happen, is the people are, they will revolt. You won't be able to keep them down. And so it's kind of like you're seeing two different things happen at once. You're seeing the tightening of the grip while you're seeing the uprising of the people. And I would say, look out for an absolute explosion.
Do you think there's enough? Because in China, nothing changed. They got their cultural revolution. The people are still under their thumb.
I think that the brainwashing in China is so ancient. It's a little bit different. The people in Brazil have been free before.
Yeah.
They haven't always been under tyranny. And so, and the people of Brazil are a different type of people. I mean, I don't want to be mean to the Chinese. They're more passive. I mean, you see Brazilian people and they've got fervor. They've got anger. They've got something. So will they be able to?
Well, they had their own January 6th. I mean, they knew that the presidency was stolen.
Yeah.
The majority of the
I don't think the people are done standing up. I don't think they've been kicked down enough to not come back up. The Chinese are almost there, but there is an uprising in China. It's a completely different topic.
I don't think it's gone that far. And I do think that the one good thing about the internet is this information is getting out there. Whereas during the Cultural Revolution, it was all done in silence.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to watch Brazil. And this is what I would say to all Brazilians. You won't win out of anger. And this goes to anybody in the United States. This goes to people in China. It goes to everybody. The anger of man doesn't work the righteousness of God. If you want to beat these totalitarian regimes, that have their thumb on the backs of the people, you will only do so with a massive uprising of the power of God. So you can have these revolutions and you can rush parliament or you can rush the governmental buildings and you can throw your Molotov cocktails or whatever you want to do. That's not going to do anything. But if you started holding mass revivals and you started bringing people to Jesus and filling them with the Holy Ghost, and like instead of bringing in freedom speakers, bringing in evangelists that really can make changes in the world, then you will be able to pull down this government. Because, and we've been saying this on our show for years, these seats worldwide are demonically held. You can't beat them otherwise. And this is what I have said. And I would love to, if anybody has a contact to Tommy Robinson, you get him in touch with me. Because number one thing that I would say to this man who wants to do right and do good, you can never beat the devil without God. You won't do it. And he's tried to take on Islam and he's tried to take on all these things and it's too big. You can't, you can't beat them without God. So that's what I would say to the Brazilians.
You have to do it the right way, because this next video here, I have from PBS NewsHour. Now, this is a little bit of propaganda, but not really. So not everything Putin does is great. The one thing that Putin has going against him is he hates evangelicals. He sees it as a religion of the West. And it's very difficult for people to be Christians like you and I in Russia. He wants you to be Orthodox. And so just as Ukraine has shut down every Russian Orthodox church, so now the Russian troops that are in occupying parts of Ukraine are shutting down what you and I would consider to be mainstream evangelical churches.
Is this on already pulled up?
PBS NewsHour. Sorry, yeah.
It's a PBS like website.
Twitter.
I'm looking.
Twitter. It says PBS
NewsHour. Looking for it. There's not that many.
Right
Twitters
before a couple of Breitbarts. Orange Breitbarts.
Here, if I, thank you. I got it.
Patriarch of the National Church at his side, Vladimir Putin and his supporters make little secret of their plans to put Russian Orthodox Christianity above all other forms of Christianity. This footage is from the Grace Evangelical Church. The people gathered here don't know it's their last service in this building. A Russian soldier stops the worship and tells the women and children to go downstairs to have their IDs checked. No one knows what will happen next. By this stage in the war, Russian forces had already killed five priests in the occupied parts of Ukraine.
They start to fingerprint everybody. They copy their ID, make pictures, addresses.
To keep their spirits up, believers sing as they wait their turn to be questioned by Russian soldiers.
We were accused being an extremist organization. We were accused being German spies and then American spy.
Mykhailo Britson is pretty far from being a spy. He's been a pastor at Grace Church since 1991, when the church building was given back to the evangelical community of Melitopol after being nationalized by the Soviet Union.
I was conveyed to their military vehicle, and they searched all church building, they searched all my house, and they told us to leave in 2 days.
In 2 years of war, no denomination has been spared death and destruction. This was an Orthodox church affiliated with Moscow, collateral damage in a Russian missile strike a year ago. But two groups in particular have suffered the most in terms of sheer numbers, and that's the Orthodox Church of Ukraine and Protestant churches that have come under extreme pressure in areas occupied by Russia.
A Baptist Protestant church. It's still standing, but everything is destroyed.
At least 206 evangelical churches have been expropriated or destroyed, according to the Institute for Religious Freedom, a Ukrainian watchdog group. Stephen Moore is a former Republican congressional staffer and founder of the Ukraine Freedom Project, a nonprofit.
When the Russians come in to a town in an occupied area, they see Protestant churches. They say, this is an American religion. you must be an agent of the American government. So they go to the churches, they shut them down, they frequently torture the pastor, and sometimes they murder believers for their faith. And we know of 29 Christian leaders who have been murdered in Ukraine by the Russians.
Wow. So this is PBS. However,
what they didn't do is what they didn't do is talk about what Zelensky does to Russian Orthodox.
Exactly. And so it's tit for tat. That's the issue. This is Ukrainian propaganda. However, there's likely a lot of truth to it. So I'm not saying that it's not true, that it's not happening. But like Leah just said, we've covered on our show for the past 2 years what Zelensky does to the Russian Orthodox people. And they all need Jesus.
Yeah.
So pray for those. Yeah. Pray for the Christians that are being persecuted in both of these areas, frankly.
Yeah. For sure.
It's not going to stay in the wind. It's an umbrella. It's an umbrella, man.
I know.
Leah's light keeps blowing over.
All right, so this Breitbart article, going back to Brazil for just real quick here, this Tesla CEO, Elon Musk, accuses the Brazilian Supreme Court Federal Tribunal Minister Alexandre de Moraes of rigging the 22 presidential election, allowing socialist convicted felon Lula to be elected president for a third term. Musk also called the STF minister, a title roughly equivalent to the U.S. Supreme Court justice, the brutal dictator of Brazil, in the latest episode of heightened tensions between the Twitter and the Brazilian judiciary. Why does the parliament allow de Moraes the power of a brutal dictator? They were elected. He was not. Throw him out. But since Alexandre put Lula out of prison and put his thumb on the scale to get Lula elected, Lula will obviously not take action against him. The next election will be key. In a third separate post, Musk said, how did Alexandre de Moraes become the dictator of Brazil? He has Lula on a leash. De Moraes, an anti-fake news crusader and leader of Brazil's Superior Electoral Tribunal, opened an investigation into Musk and his social media platform for, quote, alleged obstruction of justice and incitement to crime after Tesla CEO announced he would defy a Brazilian court order demanding the censorship of an undisclosed number of posts. The order imposed a daily fine of roughly $19,770 on the company per each account the platform failed to censor.
Oh, my.
In addition to opening an investigation into Musk, de Moraes included the Tesla CEO in a separate inquiry that was opened in July of 2021 and investigates alleged, quote, anti-democratic digital militias and it spread fake news. Twitter Dodge Designer says, we keep getting these demands from Judge Alexander to suspend accounts of sitting members of the parliament and major journalists. We could not tell them that this was on the behest of Alexandra. We had to pretend that it was due to our rules.
Wow.
What does this sound like to anybody else? Election stolen in 2020, an election stolen in 2022. The United States government pushing Twitter and all these social media companies to censor people. The same thing happening in Brazil.
It's the same playbook.
It's the same playbook because it's the same devil whispering in everybody's ears.
Yeah, and there's probably people behind the devil whispering in people's ears, too, that are the same people.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to end with some good news. Let's go to some Welsh lamb here with Gareth Wynne-Jones. He's going to put some butter in a skillet. We're going to talk about the Welsh farmers, but we're going to see what makes it so great. Look at this. Forget the light. Let it stay down.
So I've got the video three. With the lamb. I've got three. Yeah, I got the video with the lamb. We're going to start with that one.
They're making lamb.
Well, lamb I see pop. A little lamb. No, I remember that one. Yeah, I saw that one somewhere. Here we go.
Some butter in a pan first. It's absolutely looking awesome. I want it. Ready? Say go.
Go.
This is the way it's done, guys. Butter. You put a big old lamb chop. Lamb. Is that what it's called? Lamb chop? I've never really made this before.
We don't eat lamb.
We're going to once we start grazing.
Yep. Whoa.
Looks amazing.
Look at it.
So he's going to flip it. What? How did that happen?
Oh, my gosh. It's like falling off the bone. How long did that cook for?
I have
That's amazing.
Put in, look at that.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and the gravy. Look at all the gravy. Oh my gosh. That is such a UK meal. There's French. Wait, look at this. Look at this. There are French fries next to the mashed potatoes and peas and carrots. And then, wait a minute, there's three different potatoes on this plate. There's roasted potatoes, mashed potatoes, and French fries. And this is my kind of meal.
All right. You're playing
there's that one. Mint stuff. Y'all got to stop
this
doing
one says,
that.
Says, dangerous job of farming. We'll just go through some of these.
Hang on. Wait. This next Twitter. I got wet, wet, wet. What is that one?
Okay. You can do that one next.
Okay.
They're stuck. That's Gareth. He went vertical hunting and they got stuck.
Oops.
How do you get
this
out?
Has happened to Leah.
But not that deep. But yes, my shoe got stuck.
Oh,
but like legit,
boy.
There's two guys there and they're both stuck together.
Oh, that's an Leroy, you had. That's an Leroy, you. Wow, Leroy,
oh, my gosh. That's really funny.
All right, you have the little lamb there. That's, ethnic, how do you say that? Epint heart. Hardy speckled you in Salini Valley this morning, enjoying some sunshine at last.
It's just a picture.
Yeah. Do you have the little YouTube video where it says
dangerous job? Farming? Yep. Oh my gosh. God knows I want to break free. Falling in love. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Falling in love for the first time. This time I know it for real. Oops. We got one. We got a runaway. There you go. I'm going. I don't know. Should I go on the trailer? Nope. I'm going to go to the corner. I'm going to try to get out the corner. Nope, can't. Oh, that's so funny. All right. You got another one?
If you go to the next article, yeah, if you play that little bit, maybe go into minute two. They're trying to declare farming cruel and keeping cattle cruel.
The GB News, We Are the People?
Yeah, it's cattle farming animal cruelty.
I don't think that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
It says
the people feed you every day.
Okay.
Then click on it and they like kind of
now farmers are up in arms. They're fuming after the Royal Society for the Protection of Cruelty to Animals, or the RSPCA, launched their rebrand. Now this is to mark their 200th year.
Now this video, which you can see here if you're watching television, this snippet compares cattle farming to stepping on snails. If we can see, there we go. And there's a... Oh, someone's just picked up a snail. Is this... Where is...
Oh, no, he's looking after the snail, this guy.
Looking after the snail and putting it in a plant pot. How sweet.
So they're teaching everyone to be nice to the little snails. But they did have, also, someone stamping on the snails. So this is a sort of compare and contrast. Mm. So if you're a nice, caring person, you will obviously pick up the snail, put it in its little pot... And if you're a nasty, evil person, you'll stamp on it, which I quite agree with. Yes. But I think the issue is that farmers don't like it when their legitimate business and legitimate practice and something they've been doing for generations, normally, is compared with something that perhaps others would think is a bit trivial, like injuring a snail.
Quite. Well, shall we get the views of two very different sides to this argument? Today we're asking, is cattle farming animal cruelty? Delighted to be joined by farmer and broadcaster Gareth Wynne-Jones, who says the video left a lot of farmers really quite angry, and senior campaign manager at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Kate Werner, who believes the RSPCA actually isn't going far enough.
Yeah.
Well, my goodness. Let's start with you, Kate. Why aren't they going far enough?
Well, I mean, the message in this video is a positive one. All animals do deserve respect. They're living, feeling beings. They're not inanimate objects to be commodified. And, you know, true respect is not about abusing any animal for a burger or a pair of shoes. And if you agree with the sentiment in the video, the next logical step is to live in a way that causes the least harm possible to animals and go vegan. And of course, there's this misguided belief that some species are more important than others, which is speciesist thinking. But it doesn't really matter if they are big or small, if they're feathered or thinned, if they have four legs or two legs or no legs at all. Mm. You know, all animals feel pain, and they're all deserving of our respect and consideration.
Gareth, why are a lot of farmers angry with this video?
Oh, it's a pathetic advertising propaganda stunt again. And, you know, PETA make me laugh. 45,000 animals they killed last year. Yeah, domestic animals. At least my cows go into the food chain. They're kept happy, they're sustainable, and they go to feed people. Yeah, PETA and the RSPCA are a joke, really. They are trying to tar farmers again and get people to stop eating meat, drinking milk, which we've been doing for centuries. And let me tell you, as a farmer, PETA will never feed anybody. We are the people that feed you every day. And at this time of year, it's been very, very difficult. It's been wet and it's been very hard to get on the ground, and a lot of crops haven't got in. So we're going to need these animals feeding us in the future, because these are an intricate part of the whole ecosystem and the food system. So get into your steaks, get into your chickens.
You can stop them there. I don't even know why you give these PETA people time and space, but they're... If you play the
She's like, everybody
video.
Should go vegan. And I'm like, wait a minute. So from the beginning of the dawn of being human, we go back to, like, we've always eaten meat. Yeah, so we're all just all of a sudden supposed to become vegan.
Play the next video. You kind of talk about it while you're playing that with the Gore Morning Board there.
Wait a minute. I've got this one, the Fields Sports Channel.
You can skip it.
Okay.
Yeah, play the one with the sheep running through the
Okay.
Borda, Borda, good morning in Welsh. This is real life. I just, this right here, where you see these sheep. You can't have, like, Michelle, could you imagine? Honestly, when I see that, that's more beautiful than a crop planted or corn or wheat.
Oh, 100%. These people would have mankind be ripped away from their relationship with animals, right?
And the earth and grass that naturally grows into.
They want people to eat pre-manufactured things out of a box, right?
But
they don't.
Where does that all come from?
They don't want you to be a part of nature.
That are grown.
They want chemicals. They want chemicals.
Meat is the number one source where all of our food should come from, because grass is the most abundant. And Michelle, more than any beautiful garden, grass on a field with cows and sheep like this, that there's, you know, sustainable amount of sheep per grass, is quite frankly the most healing view on the planet, in my opinion.
You know, I want these people to get saved, and they need to come to know Jesus, okay?
A mom with a little lamb. What are you going to do with all these little lambs? Mary had
no, there wouldn't be. See, that's the thing that irks me, because these people, essentially what they're saying, because that cow wouldn't have a life, right? Mm-hmm. Because there would be no farmer to raise the cow. Mm-hmm. So they're not exactly for protecting animals from being mistreated, because these animals, in a lot of cases, now, if she was just against CAFOs, confinement animal farming operations, then I would be all for it. We're against CAFOs, right? But that's not what she's saying. She's saying everybody should go vegan. So let's just take responsible farmers. Let's take a Gareth Wynne-Jones who loves his animals, right? Mm-hmm. These sheep won't be born. These cows won't be born. So what she's saying is not that we don't want them injured. We don't want you to exist at all. So it's actually not loving animals. You hate them. You don't want them to be bred. You don't want them to be born. You don't want them to be alive, because no farmer is just going to raise animals for the sake of just giving them a good, happy life. Okay? Right. That's not how this works. So literally, she just wants animals not to exist, which makes her Satan.
Okay. We have some more happy videos. Michelle, will you bring up the Farming Britain video? It's 3 minutes, and it's hand shearing 800 sheep in 1983.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of a really cool video here.
Oh, do we have an ad? Oh, hang on. Well, I'm going to mute the ads because this is YouTube.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go.
On Killarney Estate.
Is it?
It was Dick it's McBain going. Was a farmer, a Ballinluig farm it was called on Killarney Estate. And myself and all the local communities used to go out and help with the hand clipping every year. So this year I just came back from Africa working and I had a video camera with me. So I threw it in the back of the old Range Rover and went out for the hill clipping. And I took the camera out and just did a wee bit of filming during the day. And it was it was not recognized at that time that this was actually capturing a way of life that was disappearing from the Highlands. You know, the local community all coming to assist on a hill clipping. It was the last time that all the clipping was done with hand shears. I think the very next year there was generators brought out and they were using machines to clip the sheep, which obviously involved a lot less people and and the older generation weren't part of it. It was the younger boys with their machines that were doing the clipping. It's about 20 minutes long and it it shows people gathering in the morning, sharpening their shears, and the ladies in the bothy getting the meals ready for the lunches and the pieces.
How many people were actually doing clipping?
I think there was probably about 20 of us had shears in our hands at some time during the day, and another probably dozen doing the rolling the wool.
Need to go to the gym after that.
Bagging the wool.
Nope.
Gathering the sheep in. And,
you know, back when living actually just kept you in shape. That's what I pray for. We're living.
Well, I think we probably clipped somewhere in the region of 800 that day. Yeah.
Wow.
And were the pieces worth anything?
Well, they probably were then. You know, that was 40-odd years ago. So at one time, you know, the hill clippings would pay for a shepherd's wages.
Is that 40 sheep per person?
It was sold a few years ago to Brewdog. They've given up farming sheep on it.
When did you say it was, 1980?
It's 1983, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And it was a social interaction of everyone as well that was important. You know, there was there was a wee 18-month-old toddler.
He said 20 of them did 800.
Running around, and there was aunties and grannies, and as well as you know, lots of retired shepherds who'd sharpen their shears and come out for the day on the hill and meet and talk with
That's amazing.
Everyone around about. And yeah, there used to be a piper who'd come out as well. He wasn't there that year, but there would be a ceilidh at the end of the day, and there would be probably a glass or two of whiskey drunk, and
that's awesome.
Stories exchanged. So it was a great day.
He's in the wool bag, Leah.
It was a privilege for us youngsters in our 20s to be part of it, and you know, to see it happening. But
that's amazing.
It's all but disappeared, I guess, throughout the Highlands and Islands.
Wow, that's really good. So now would be a good time. I'm going to do this, but while everybody's still here, don't leave. I don't know if Leah's got another video or two for you guys. But Old School Survival Boot Camp is coming up May 17th through the 19th. It's in Hocking Hills, Ohio. It's the largest homesteading, prepping, survival, bushcrafting meet in the Midwest. It happens every year. This will be our third year going. Leah and I are teaching four classes. And this is these types of things, getting back to this way of life, is what we're trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there is a giveaway that we started yesterday, or Friday, excuse me. No, I think it was just yesterday. If you share the website, and Patriot Gallery can put this in the chat, oldschoolsurvivalbootcamp.com, on any social media platform, okay, that we're just trying to spread the word. This is part of the entry to enter. If you share the website, oldschoolsurvivalbootcamp.com, on any social media platform, and then send me an email at massfaith, excuse me, well, the email is, you know, massfaith33@gmail.com, massfaith33@gmail.com. It's in the description of every video that we do on Rumble. You can get my email address and just say, I shared this on social media. It's honor system. You will be entered. And tomorrow night, we're going to do a drawing at 7 p.m. You will be entered to win a family pass to attend Old School Survival Bootcamp. This is a $500 value, okay? Now, also, though, we do have a promo code for you if you don't win. It is RCOSS24. This is a code that we're continuing to use. It was specifically for Bard's Fest, but we're continuing to use. Saves you 45%. I mean, they just, at that point, you're coming almost for free. Okay, they're like not making any money on your tickets at all. So RCOSS24 is the promo code to save 45% on attending this year's three-day event. There's over 160 classes. I don't know how many there are. It's crazy. Let me tell you how amazing it is. Every single person that that attended last year that we know is planning on attending again this year. Okay. It's just one of those things you don't want to miss out on. You can camp. It's very communal. There's free tent camping, I think. I think all the RV spots are taken, but you can probably get spots in other campgrounds that are surrounding it. We just want you guys to come because that is the way of life that we're all supposed to be living. And you don't know how to do what you don't know how to do, and you want to get into it. And sometimes you need to see somebody. Imagine if you had been able to be there and see someone. I don't think we actually have a sheep shearing class. That might be something to add at some point, but see somebody do something like that, whether it's butchering a chicken or something like that. You really need to see a lot of times hands-on. So to have all of these hands-on, you know, or observational classes, it's invaluable to get back to the way of living that God wants us to live. So the contest ends. We'll do a drawing tomorrow at 7 p.m. So share oldschoolsurvivalbootcamp.com on any social media platform. Send me an email, masfaith33@gmail.com, and let me know that you entered. And then we will do a drawing tomorrow live. We'll just do a little live video, 7 p.m., and we will pull out the winner of the Family Pass, which is a $500 value. And don't forget to use promo code RCOSS24 to save 45% to attend. We want to see you guys there. All right, Leah, anything else left?
Yeah. The last video here, how to become a crofter. A crofter is like a farmer in Scotland. Nice.
See, exactly. Or you could attend Old School Survival Boot Camp.
Someone who rents and works a small farm.
We first filmed Neil's croft in August last year. It's a blank canvas, both inside and out.
Crofting isn't a thing of vast incomes, so sensible spend, sensible return.
But there's great potential. He has pasture and silage fields, access to hundreds of acres of common grazing on the moor above the croft, and there's also a share in a flock of sheep owned collectively by the crofters along his strath.
If they want crofters to play a big hand environmentally in Scotland in the future, then making sensible, sustainable use of common grazing and supporting livestock grazing on common grazings that keeps them in good condition is going to be really important. It'll keep people on the land and it'll help them sequester this carbon that they want to in peatland. Because one of the worst things for peatland is too much woodland expansion drying the peatland out. So things like Hebrideans and a few cattle will keep the moorland a good heart.
Okay. One thing we noticed, we went up onto the moorland, no grazing.
Very little. And one of the issues for crofting is the demographics of it. I'm probably quite a young crofter, and I'm steady. And that's why I'm so keen for the kids to be involved. We want more young people and we want a more diverse community crofting.
When I leave school, I want to see the world. And the opportunity is there for jobs or something similar. I think I will come back to this part of the world, to the croft. And if I'm fortunate enough to have my own family, to get them into crofting as well.
Over the past few months, the family have moved in, and so have his first purchases, Shetland cattle, which need feeding.
All that happens here is the wind changes speed and direction, David, nothing else. We took the croft on just on about a year ago, so there's a lot going on with fences to repair, and himself there in the middle, Gregor, He's about as far away in genetics as he could be from the rest of them. So we'll use him as our herd bull for the next couple of years. So what I'm up to here, end of March, we'll put them onto these no-fence collars. It's a wee bit of a breeze, right now. And we're just keeping them used to coming used for a wee bit of sugar beet and some cake, just so they come when they see us. And then they're working inside the electric fences. Once the collars go on, we'll take the collars off and they'll go out over the top of the hill here onto the common grazing. And the cows have got an important positive role, not just in beef production, but in maintaining the habitat. So that's what we're up to. Go. So that's Tito. Come on now.
Uh-oh, it blew away.
This is blown away. So I think we'll just put it on the ground here today. Come on, guys. Oh, bugger me! Gregor, man. Come on, Tito, save yourself. There you go, lassie. Yeah, aye, no bother. He's not hitting you hard, he just can't see.
Aww.
He's no bother like the big fella. He's easy going. These are the original cattle of the Vikings. So these are the cattle that they brought when they settled here. And these are very classically the horns like you see on the Viking helmet. So in Shetland, they refer to them as Shetland Kai. Rather than the Shetland cattle.
Well,
but they're one of our sort of ancient breeds. But they do well in what people would consider a harsh climate, David. And you can see they've got a good coat on them. They've got a good back on them after the winter. And they don't take a lot. We give them a bucket of concentrate just to keep them vidable. But they're in good nick. And it's been a long, wet winter, and they look fine for it. And he's just a hungry brute, him. That's why he tried to push me out the way. the sort of classic colour of the Shetland cow is black and white. Brown and white is a really well-established colour again now, and occasionally you get full colours. And Gregor he's got quite a lovely colour, but all the calves that he's thrown to date are coloured either black and white or a lovely kind of grey and white. But single full colour in them is not uncommon.
And so you said he's partially sighted?
Thankfully everything else about him is fully functional. And we got him from a breeding programme that had him, but he's probably one of the most popular gentlemen in the Shetland cattle world in the north. He's sort of the Casanova of the Shetland cattle. So since we got him, we've an endless queue of people wanting to hire Sir Gregor.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
We haven't seen what he produces yet with this lot, but he comes with a good reputation. But maybe in a year's time, we'll look at some of the calves we've got and we'll decide how we got on.
Oh, that's fun. That's really fun.
All right, so speaking of fun, we've been meaning to open this up. This is my pillow.
Okay.
I got my pillow to towels.
Oh, awesome.
I have been waiting to open these up. Mom said, open them up. We need them now.
So
I got
two
different kinds. I got the actual dish towels and I got washcloths. And I wanted the kind that actually worked. So we're gonna give ourselves a review of the MyPillow dish towels. Now I got these pretty green ones, this lime green. I thought they were pretty color. Oh, there they go. Okay. So everybody said online that they were real cotton and they actually soaked things up. So I'm hoping that these dish towels, they're sturdy. They're actual real cotton. They don't feel like the polyester kind that you get. And they're pretty big.
So this is the one that they have on sale right now. This six pack for $25.
A little bit bigger than I had expected.
Oh my gosh, it's huge.
It's really pretty. You could wear it as a scarf, I think.
So that one looks different than the other one. So it's a variety pack of types. Those look more like...
These have like a pop to them. They're thicker.
Like a terry cloth.
No, not terry.
I just mean it's like a thicker, more absorbent. Yeah, thicker. And then the other one is more of one of like a...
Like a terry cloth.
But that's a terry cloth in your left hand?
Yeah.
The pretty one?
I think they're all...
Because it looks more like a... what am I thinking of? The flat towels, the tea towels. It looks like the material of a tea towel on your right shoulder.
I don't know how to get
shoulder.
My camera back.
Hold... That's okay.
I'm stuck.
Hold it up again. Hold the pretty one up again. That's not a tea towel? No, the pretty one. Well, I mean, not that that one's not pretty, but the one that has the designs on it.
This one seems more like a tea towel.
That's what I just said. You said it's like terry cloth. Mm-hmm. The tea towel and terry cloth are two totally different beasts.
Okay.
So there's like so three huge tea towels,
mm-hmm,
and like three terry cloth-ish sort of bumpy type towels. There's only two of those. So there's four. Oh, it was only a pack of four?
No, it was a pack of six. A pack of five.
Five? So they're like five bucks a piece.
Yeah.
But they're huge.
They're huge. Now, this is what I'm most excited about.
Here it comes.
Better work.
Your crinkling is very much picking up on the microphone.
I think Mike did it. I do. I really do.
So those are like dish towels. So there's you've got kitchen towels and dish towels. Now those are terry cloth. Oh, they're so cute with lemon on them. Those look thick.
These are going to be good.
Oh, wow. So those are like dish towels.
I highly recommend already.
And there were many designs. I need to pull this up because
this is what I've been looking for. This is what I have been looking my whole life for. Oh, all right.
Let's see here.
Look. Is that not so cute?
So they have a multiple. Oh, that is really cute. So that, was so that a four pack?
No, this is a one, two, I think they're all five packs. Three.
No, because right now, hang on. I want to show them what's on the website here. Okay. Well, right now the four pack dish towel set, which you didn't even get this.
They have four and six packs. Maybe that was six. There are four and six packs.
So the little one is a six pack. And they've got different designs. So this is a more simple design. Okay.
These are really pretty.
And they're actually, the six pack is only $19.99. It's on sale right now. Now the six pack dish towel set that you got that has the tea towels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's varying designs that you can get. There's like really pretty red ones.
I had thought that these would make me smile, but I did not think they would make me smile this much. They're so pretty in person.
Okay, so what you're looking...
so vibrant.
So there's the six-pack dish towel set that's... I don't know why it's cheaper than the four-pack dish towel set. Maybe the four-pack dish towel set is... maybe those towels are bigger.
I don't know, but these dishcloths...
Yeah, these are bigger. Okay. Deal. So hang on.
These are real deal.
Listen to me here real quick. The one that's on sale, the one that is on sale right now, you did not purchase. You don't have this one. These are 16 by 28 terry striped towels. They're flat on one side. They're terry on the other. Then it's got two coordinating waffle towels. Okay. So these are huge. These ones right here that the four pack for $25 are probably the size of the ones that you got.
Yeah.
Which is the six pack dish towel set for $30. Okay. Yeah,
they're huge.
Then you've got the little pack. Now, how come there's not the lemon ones aren't available here? Did you buy all those out? Oh, here we go. No, see, that's different. The ones that you got that have lemons on them are not available anymore. It looks like it would appear. So you got like the last of those. It looks like that.
More. They were brand new.
Yeah, but they're not there.
Okay. Well, you just have to wait for them to come back. Then I waited.
But the style is there. The style, but not the the type of towel, just not the print.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. But it's still. So what you're saying is this is a thick towel.
Very thick.
So you guys need to go. What else did you get? What did you order?
Sheets. I got another set of cool sheets, seafoam color.
So you got like a blue?
Seafoam.
Well,
like
right now. Blue. Okay, hang on. This is so crazy.
This is so soft.
Right now they have the per cal sheets are $24.98. Just by the way, I mean, this is a huge deal.
Huge.
That's a huge sale.
You can tell that these are going to be the kind that keep you cool. Like right now, I pulled them out of the bag and my skin is already feeling cooler. This is a good.
What kind of sheet is that?
Percal.
So that's what's on sale right now for $25.
Yeah. I highly recommend these.
I love those sheets. My sheets, I have a set of flannel sheets and I have a set of white percal sheets. And I love them.
These are like the kind that your grandma always
yes,
had. Real good,
like
thick sheets.
Solid sheets. Like I'm solid making a motion sheets. With my hands of like stretching them. That's
and big
fun.
Pillowcases for their big My Pillows.
Right.
So I highly recommend these sheets. These are really nice. That's awesome. They're really soft. They're really sturdy. They're going to go get washed now.
MyPillow.com/resistance or /RC. Use promo code RC at the checkout. Or resistance. Either one works. Excellent, Leah. Did you use our own promo code?
Yeah.
Good.
Of course I did.
There you go. See, we use our own promo code. Duh.
I did.
Good deal. I'm excited to try these towels. We'll come back and let you know how they actually function in the kitchen.
Yeah, it looks like the kind that I got aren't there. Interesting.
I know, with the lemons on there. I know. Those were really pretty.
Huh.
I don't know what to
tell
you.
Well, it's got to keep cycling through. I was between this and the green and the pink.
Yeah, they literally are not available. The green ones are. The green ones that you got are just that really pretty lemony thing. Not on sale. But that so the six pack dish towel set that you got, mm-hmm. it's $19.99. So I mean that's a good deal.
No way. Mine says $29.99.
No, that's the different set. The little washing dishes towel set.
Uh-huh.
Right? Not the hand towels, drying dishes towel set. The drying dishes towel set, $29.99.
Dish towel versus dishcloth.
Oh, excuse me, dishcloth. So the little ones, six pack, $19.99. The big one, six pack, is $10 more.
Because this is a really good deal.
It is a good deal.
I spent more than $20, I think, on these.
You did. You didn't get, you. I think you got them before the sale.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. That's awesome. All right. So I think that finishes our show for today. Leah, great job. Good job on the show. We are, I think, going to be on Kingdom Roundtable tomorrow night. Is that right, Leah?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
We haven't decided yet. Corey's asked us to go on. I'm not sure if we are available or not. But either way, Corey's going to be on. He's going to be talking about Israel and the Iran bombing Israel on Kingdom Roundtable tomorrow night.
Yeah, so check that out.
Leah is not sure if she is going to start her new Tuesday show this Tuesday or next Tuesday, but she's going to be starting a new Tuesday show. So keep an eye out for that. And then Wednesday night will be Revelation Red Pill, as always. Thursday nights we are adding the Revolutionary Revivalist. So keep a lookout for that. I'm not sure if we're going to add them for this Thursday or the following Thursday. But essentially, we will have, when all is said and done, at least for the 9 weeks that Leah's going to do her program, a program for you guys every single day of the week, in addition to additional shows and shows that Patriot Gallery does as well. So we're trying to get you guys more content on resistancechicks.com, and the Lord is leading that. So be excited. Be on the lookout for that. We want to see you at Old School Survival Bootcamp, oldschoolsurvivalbootcamp.com. Don't forget to enter. We'll do a drawing live tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, it's not just a conspiracy theory if it's actually the truth. We love you guys. God loves you. God bless. We did a Gospel of Peace program with Scott Kesterson last night. I want you guys to go back and watch it. People have already said that they've listened twice because Leah got... Oh, thanks, Mom. Leah got some incredible words from the Lord live last night that will blow your mind. You need to listen to it twice. There were a lot of things there. It was just such a great show. And then Patriot Gallery reminds me, if you missed out on coming to the Bards Fest Eclipse event that we did at Pastor Neil Peterson's Church Harvest Revival Center in Brookville, Ohio, the entire live stream is available on our Rumble channel from both Sunday night and all day on Monday. It was a phenomenal event. So many of you guys have already said thank you. And Leah just left, so now my video's cropped. Get myself in a little box. I've already said thank you for doing this because it's changed my life. So I would highly encourage you guys to binge watch that. Watch all day long. You won't be sorry, especially when Apostle Greg gets up. Leah and I will also, with Scott Kesterson, will also be on the Ascension Hub with Apostle Greg on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. I don't have the link for that yet, but again, put it on your calendar. I will make sure that it goes on resistancechicks.com and on our event calendar on resistancechicks.com for you guys to be able to tune in for that. So, all right, we love you guys. We'll see you next time right here from resistancechicks.com.